The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tom Boyle is a novelist, and he's written stories and essays for the magazine going back to 1993. That, by coincidence, was right around the time he took up residence in Montecito, California. The town seemed almost like Eden to him then. But Boyle and millions of other Californians have just lived through back-to-back natural disasters, capping a year of weather-related calamities around the country. Tom Boyle wrote about returning home to Montecito a few weeks after the mudslides there.
The eerie thing about those first nights back in Montecito after the mudslides had to do with absence. The absence, first of all, of my neighbors, almost all of whom were under a mandatory evacuation order. They were gone, their houses dark, their cars rolling down other streets altogether. Most homes were without electricity, which brought the darkness close, and the stillness, too. Apart from the sounds of nature, the muffled hoots of the owls come to nest in the woods out back of my house, and the chirrup of the tree frogs enlivened by the first rain here in nearly a year, there was the delicate, almost apologetic beeping of the heavy equipment brought in to clear away the debris. The helicopters were, for the most part, gone. The survivors airlifted to safety, and the search for the missing left to the cadaver dogs. I moved here 25 years ago, attracted by the natural beauty and semi-rural ambiance, the short walk to the beach and the lower village, and the enveloping views of the Santa Ynez Mountains. We have no sidewalks here. If we want sidewalks, we can take the 5-minute drive into Santa Barbara. But we don't want sidewalks. We want dirt, trees, flowers, the chaparral that did its best to green the slopes and declivities of the mountains until last month, when the biggest wildfire in California history reduced it all to ash. On the apocalyptic morning of December 16th, I was on the roof, wearing a surgical mask and wielding a garden hose, when a great black cape of smoke enveloped all of Montecito and whitened everything with ash until you might have mistaken it for snow. At 10:30, the police were at the gate, enforcing the newly imposed mandatory evacuation order. And I drove up the coast to rejoin my wife, my daughter, and our coddled and oblivious pets. In all, we were stuck in a motel room for 10 days until the order was rescinded, and we were able to return home just in time for Christmas. Rain was forecast for the early morning hours of Tuesday, January 9th, and it was expected to be heavy at times, very heavy. I welcomed the rain, which came on Monday night as a long, gentle, misting sacrament that just barely dampened the streets and shimmered in the leaves of the trees. Feeling celebratory, I walked down to my favorite watering hole in the lower village, and though I barely needed an umbrella, I carried one with me anyway, mindful of the forecast. The rain awoke my wife and me at 3:30 the next morning, an intense, hammering rain that seemed to explode all around us. The sky was brightly lit to the north where the mountains lie. What was it? Lightning, I reasoned. And then my head was on the pillow, and I was asleep. As I was later to discover, the concentrated rain propelled a debris flow down the slopes of the denuded mountains. A gas main had been sheared off, and the escaping methane had exploded in flames, incinerating the houses just below it, even as the debris flow tore into them and raged on past, gathering force and seeking the low ground. We woke to a gentle rain and the wail of sirens. Too many sirens. Sirens that multiplied one atop the other and kept on multiplying till it seemed there was no other sound. The electricity was out. There was no newspaper. It wasn't until we drove into Santa Barbara for breakfast and news that we began to understand. We were among the lucky ones. Our house, one of the oldest in the community, sits atop a hill, at the bottom of which lies the stream bed of Montecito Creek. Through most of the year, the creek barely lives up to the name. But on that night, it jumped its banks and swept to the sea, taking with it everything in its path. Houses vanished. Trees were uprooted like weeds. Boulders taller than I pounded through the watercourses like the bowling balls of Titans. A man who lived just down the street from us was killed, and his teenage son was swept 3/4 of a mile down Olive Mill Road and across the freeway to the beach. All of this I learned secondhand through local and national news sources. It wasn't until the 6th day after the storm that I had an opportunity to tour the devastated areas and see the effects for myself. At the bottom of my street, there was a remnant riverbed in the place where once had stood houses I'd seen every day for 25 years. Mudflats stretched off into the distance. In her essay, The Wreck of Time, Annie Dillard speaks of compassion fatigue in a world in which catastrophe and annihilation come as regularly as the progression of the days. Her point of reference was the 1991 cyclone in Bangladesh, which killed 138,000 people and displaced millions. How can we begin to comprehend the magnitude of that, let alone sympathize? These are just figures, digits, symbols on a page. We each inhabit a consciousness, and that consciousness gives us the world and what we can grasp for the apprehension of our 5 senses. But the universe has no consciousness. It just is. 21 of my neighbors are dead. 2 are missing. That probably doesn't mean much to the rest of the world, or for that matter, to you. For me, though, it's personal. And I want my village back.
T.C. Boyle. You can read more of his work, fiction and nonfiction, at newyorker.com.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.